this next guest speaker comes from the community of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe, CMRI. And Mr. CMRI, will you then give us a briefing on the background and the history of your community? Oh yes, Mr. Crazy Commentator. And maybe I shall begin by referring to the two bulletins published by our bishop on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of his consecration as a bishop. And this one bulletin that shows him kneeling under the mantle of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe, De Maria Nunquistatis, with the rainbow above, tells us in here different parts that I will just read parts of now. This young man, Francis Shuckart, was never destined to remain still for very long, though he would never now be completely well. Francis began a career that would amaze us, and one with good health. Teaching, traveling, studying, politics, drama, journalism, you name it, he was doing it. Lectures, interviews, television, radio programs, the foundation of the Fatima Cell all over the world. Instruction of youth, there is no avenue left unturned. By August 5th, Feast of Our Lady of Snows in 1967, Francis had his own new little religious family. And by the end of that year, 1967, Paul VI had destroyed the Mass and implemented a large part of his plan for the Masonic domination of the Church. The dark clouds of Vatican II were already shutting out every vestige of light, grace, and truth. Our Lady had much greater work in store for His Excellency. It was again the Basilica of Our Lady of the Snows in Rome in 1978 that Our Lady revealed her future plans for a chosen apostle and bishop, whose province extends far beyond the borders of America, which really means to say it was universal jurisdiction, for now Mary had made her little slave Francis the Pope of the Universal Church. His Holiness Francis Shuckart did not reveal to everybody that he was the Pope of the Church, but he simply started doing things that only the popes do, such as wearing the white cassock with the gold trimmings, as we see here in the very pictures of him in this bulletin, where it shows him in the papal cassock, I guess giving the papal blessing to some of the religious brothers and clerics. Well, Mr. CMRI, it seems like you're getting off to a good start for quite a history and a real story. And as I look through these bulletins here, I see that there are so many crazy contradictions, I would like to ask your explanation of them. For example, I read on the fifth page of the bulletin showing his Episcopal coat of arms, a traditionalist bishop began writing to Bishop Francis, asking him to accept ordination to the priesthood and subsequent Episcopal consecration. And in speaking to you, Mr. CMRI, we know that this traditionalist bishop was Daniel Q. Brown of the Old Roman Catholic Schismatic Rite. Is that what a traditionalist is today? An old schismatic? And is that what the traditions of the Catholic Church are, to deny the papacy? Are these the traditions of the Catholic Church, that the old schismatics, having been consecrated himself without a papal mandate from Rome, incurred automatic excommunication reserved to the Holy See in the most special manner? For I read here that on April 1951, the Sacred Congregation of the Holy Office in Rome, at the Pope's direction, issued this decree. A bishop of whatsoever rite or degree who consecrates to the episcopacy, one who has neither been appointed by the Holy See nor expressly confirmed by it, and the person who receives such consecration, even though coerced by grave fear, incur automatic excommunication reserved to the Holy See in a most special manner. And again I read this encyclical letter issued by His Holiness Pope Pius XII on June 29th, 1958. No one can lawfully confer Episcopal consecration unless he has received the mandate of the Apostolic See. Consequently, if consecration of this kind is being given contrary to all right and law, and by this crime the unity of the Church is being seriously attacked, an excommunication reserved in a most special manner to the Apostolic See has been established, which is automatically incurred by anyone who receives consecration irresponsibly conferred and by the actual consecrator. So are those the traditions of the true church founded by Jesus Christ, that we no longer believe in the papacy, we no longer follow the decrees and the encyclical letters of the true popes? And this gets to be quite a contradicting thing, for here we see it was Pope Pius XII who issued this excommunication, which in itself excommunicated and suspended this new bishop, Francis Schuckardt, and excommunicated him, reserved in a most special way to the Holy See, which means that only a true pope can absolve him from that sin, or someone who has the jurisdiction from the true pope to do so. And then it is really gets to be a crazy thing when we read in the same bulletin on page 7, under the year 1977 of the fall, second pilgrimage to the shrines of Europe, Bishop Francis Conrad Maria celebrates Mass at the tomb of Pope Pius XII in the Vatican. Do we really believe that Pope Pius XII rejoiced, or was he turning over in that coffin when he had this excommunicated, illicit, sinful sacrilege taking place over his tomb? For is it to be a traditionalist bishop that we disregard what the Prince of Theologians tells us, St. Thomas Aquinas? Jurisdiction can only be used in relation to another man. Consequently, since every excommunicated person has suffered from the communion of the faithful, he is deprived of the use of jurisdiction. And then going on in the same question 22, article 3 of the supplement, St. Thomas writes, although an excommunicated or suspended person does not lose his jurisdiction, yet he does lose its use. And after all, then, how did Bishop Schuckardt ever obtain jurisdiction, since you cannot invoke Epikaia to obtain it? Well, Mr. CMRI, what do you have to say? Well, Mr. Crazy Commentator, it's like this, you see. Well, maybe you better ask the priest and Bishop Musey that answer. I'm kind of vague right now. Well, further, Mr. CMRI, we know from the Catholic Encyclopedia, volume 11, page 281, that it reads, no one but a bishop can give any orders now without a delegation from the Pope. For lawful ordination, the bishop must be a Catholic in communion with the Holy See, free from censures, and must observe the laws prescribed for ordination. He cannot lawfully ordain any except his own subjects without authorization. And now this was from the Catholic Encyclopedias, published in 1910. We know that was certainly upheld and promulgated in official way in 1917 by Pope Benedict XV, and it's always been held throughout the Church, recently especially. That's one of the marks of the Church to be one. And Mr. CMRI, if you are going to tell me that Epikaia can be invoked to go against what all the holy saints and fathers and doctors of the Church and theologians tell us it cannot be invoked against, then you're also going to tell me that you no longer follow what this Catholic Encyclopedia teaches us here under the reign of Pope St. Pius X, and you're going to tell me that the encyclicals of a true pope, the decrees of true popes, are no longer effective, then you're going to tell me that anything goes. For that means that if you don't follow these encyclicals and decrees of Pope Pius XII, Benedict XV, and all the others back to the history of the Church, then of course you don't follow what Pope St. Pius V said in his Quo Primum Decree. You don't follow what he wrote in his Bull De Defectibus. You don't follow what Pope Leo XIII wrote in his Bull Apostolicae Curiae, declaring that Anglican orders are invalid. In fact, you're a little bit more crazy than the Conciliar Church coming out from Vatican II. But if you still persist that you're going to invoke Epikaia or some other way and get around this papal mandate business, then I'm going to ask you a few more questions, Mr. CMRI. If one of your oblate priests goes into a Eastern state today, which is not under the jurisdiction of Bishop George Musey, then Who does that oblate priest obtain his jurisdiction from? Say that he went into New York. All right, you obtain it then from this other bishop that comes from Bishop Husey himself or from Archbishop Took. How about if that priest goes into Mexico? If there's an oblate priest, maybe Father Mary James would think he's going down there on a mission. Which Mexican bishop does he get his faculties from? If he should go on into South America, what Took bishop does he get his faculties from? If he goes into Canada, where do you get your faculties from? If he goes to New Zealand, which bishop gives him faculties? If he goes to the Holy Land, where does he get his faculties? If he goes into Germany, where does he get faculties? If he goes into any country in the world, does it all come from Bishop Musey? Does that mean that he has universal jurisdiction? Does that mean, of course, then he's the Pope? And I need to ask also, Mr. CMRI, if you get around this papal mandate, which was laid down for this very reason, among others, what part of the world did Archbishop Took have under his jurisdiction before he died? How many countries or continents or states of the United States? And did Bishop Took take over all of America, North America, Central America, and South America in just one big sweeping move? Or was it a kind of gradual thing where it sneaked in on you, maybe like the evening dusk turning into darkness? And when Archbishop Took over America, did he take over the Northwest at the same time that Bishop Francis Conrad Maria Schuckart supposedly had his jurisdiction in the Northwest? Does that mean that what day then did Bishop Schuckart receive his spiritual jurisdiction? Does Bishop Francis Schuckart still have any real, true spiritual jurisdiction? If you say no, then tell me what day of what year he lost it. And was Spokane, Washington at one time under the jurisdiction of at least two or more bishops? If so, what priests around there were under which bishop? And furthermore, Mr. CMRI, who I understand now is operating under the jurisdiction of Bishop George Musey, and the talk that Bishop George Musey gave in the community in Spokane on April 22nd, 1985, he made the statement, speaking about Archbishop Took, said, "Why should I go to Rome? There is no one there to receive me." And now, Mr. CMRI, if there is no one in Rome with authority to receive Archbishop Took, then who is there in Rome to give him back jurisdiction after he excommunicated himself by consecrating other bishops without a papal mandate? And if there's no jurisdiction in Rome, no one there to receive him, who could he receive a valid mandate from to consecrate others? And if you're going to tell me that it's not necessary to have a papal mandate, then I'm going to also ask you, are you lying when you pray in the act of faith, "I believe these and all of the truths which the Holy Catholic Church teaches"? Any reference I've ever been able to look up tells me very distinctly and clearly that this papal mandate is now necessary for a licit consecration of another bishop. In my mind, that's saying very clearly that that is part of the teachings of the Catholic Church. Do you also then lie to God every time you supposedly pray the act of faith? Whereas we pray in what is known as the Athanasian Creed, begins, "Whoever wishes to be saved needs above all to hold the Catholic faith. Unless each one preserves this whole and inviolate, he will without a doubt perish in eternity." And the same creed ends, "This is a Catholic faith. Unless everyone believes this faithfully and firmly, he cannot be saved." Now, do Catholics no longer believe that what the popes write in their encyclicals and decrees are not binding? Do Catholics no longer believe, in order to remain a Catholic, that what canon law says is not really what the teachings of the church are. Do Catholics, in order to remain Catholic, no longer believe what the Catholic encyclopedias that have the imprimaturs of two bishops on them teach? Do Catholics, in order to remain Catholics, no longer believe what the Prince of Theologians in the Catholic Church teaches us? If Catholics, to remain Catholics, no longer believe what the Catholic Church taught at the end of 1958, then I kind of wonder, Mr. CMRI, if you are a Catholic. Do Catholics no longer believe the Catholic teachings that epikaia may not be invoked against the eternal law of God, the natural law, the divine positive law, human invalidating laws? It can only be invoked for individual cases. It can never be invoked with jurisdiction in the external forum. Do Catholics no longer believe that consecrating a bishop without a papal mandate is involving things of jurisdiction in the external forum? Do the Catholics of this traditional group no longer believe the old traditional Catholic beliefs that jurisdiction is of divine institution? Do Catholics, in order to remain Catholic, no longer believe the Catholic teachings that the seven sacraments are of divine institution? Do Catholics, in order to remain Catholics, no longer believe the truth of the Catholic Church that approbation to found a religious congregation is not based on canon law alone? It is founded in the law of nature, and therefore there is no way that epikaia can be invoked to obtain this necessary approbation? And do Catholics who wish to remain Catholics no longer believe the teachings of the Catholic Church that no lay person ever has any ecclesiastical jurisdiction? And do Catholics, in order to remain Catholic, no longer believe the teaching of the Catholic Church that, which Father Dennis Filomenri quoted in his letter of June 21st, when he gives the last page about the canons to be applied, if a person by his own authority takes possession of an ecclesiastical benefice, office, or dignity, incurs the following penalties: suspension from a deprivation of any benefice, office, or dignity which he had previously obtained, and even by disposition if the gravity of the offense calls for it. And does anyone in the community of CMRI deny that Bishop Shukart founded and gave the approbation to the so-called religious congregation to Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe? And further on, the next paragraph, Father Dennis Filomenri quotes from the commentary of canon law by Woolward and Smith: those without canonical provisions seize or allow themselves to be illegitimately thrust into or to retain an ecclesiastical office, benefice, or dignity, and all who take part in this incur ipso facto excommunication reserved in a special manner to the Apostolic See. This, of course, applies very directly to Francis Shukart, when he was still a layman who had no canonical provisions to illegitimately then take over supposedly the ecclesiastical office of being a religious superior and the superior general of this new founded congregation. And obviously then Father Dennis Filomenri cut his own throat here, because he also is supposedly a superior in this congregation long before Brother Francis became Bishop Francis, which means that Father Dennis was ipso facto excommunicated. And how did he get his jurisdiction, which he never had, back again? And how then can he be now the superior general without any canonical provision, because it takes authority to elect a new superior general of the religious order? And furthermore, if Francis Shukart was excommunicated when he supposedly or even validly was consecrated a bishop, we know then that he never had any jurisdiction from that time, because there's been no authority could go to receive it back again. And yet he, Bishop Francis Shukart, put Father Dennis Filomenri into that so-called office of being the vicar general, which is certainly an ecclesiastical office, and Father Dennis Filomena-Marie then being illegitimately thrust into it, incurred ipso facto excommunication, reserved in his special manager of the Apostolic See. Or don't the CMRI Catholics believe these things that the Church teaches? And do the CMRI traditional Catholics believe that religious profession, like any other human contract and vows, may be invalid? And that it may be invalid in as many ways as there are conditions which are necessary in order to the validity of it? Sometimes religious profession may be invalid by the law of nature, and sometimes by ecclesiastical law, sometimes by an internal defect, and sometimes from an external defect. Do the CMRI religious, quote-unquote, believe that on the part of religious order four conditions are required in order to the validity of religious profession? These are pontifical approbation of the community as a religious order. And do they honestly some way believe that the community of Mary Immaculate Queen of the Universe has this necessary approbation from the Holy See? The second thing required to make a valid religious profession is lawful power in the superior who in the name of the order receives the profession. There is no lawful superior when he does not have real spiritual jurisdiction, and I hope by now it's plain enough that Bishop or lay brother, Brother Francis Shuckart, has never had, and the way things look, never will have, any ecclesiastical jurisdiction, which follows from all the others in that congregation of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe. So there can be no valid religious profession. And further on, do the CMRI religious believe the conditions necessary on the part of the religious to make his profession valid, among them being a full year of probation? It is very obvious to anyone who was in the community that not a single one of the so-called priests, or even if they're a valid priest, ever made a religious year of novitiate, and therefore never made a truly religious profession. And if you look at the requirements for a full year of probation, obviously never was anyone able to make that novitiate, because first of all, it requires to be made in a true religious order, and there is no true religious congregation of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe, because it never had the approbation from any lawful ecclesiastical authority. And do the CMRI traditionalist Catholics believe what it states here in a little booklet entitled The Catechism on the Religious State and Conformed with the Court of Canon Law by Louis Fanfani, O.P., published by the Herder Book Company in 1956, as an imprimatur by Joseph E. Reiter, STD, Archbishop of St. Louis, September 30th, 1955, and an imprimi potest by T.S. McDermott, O.P. And in this little catechism, it reads here on page 43, question 92, how long must the novitiate last? The answer: in every religious institute, the novitiate must last at least one full and continuous year under penalty of making the profession null and void, from Canon 555. The year is to be computed according to the calendar. Hence, if the novitiate begins October 1st, it ends on October 1st of the following year, even if there be a question of a leap year. For the year to be integral, it is necessary to compute from the end of the day on which the novitiate was started to the year following, regardless of the hour in which the novitiate started. Thus, if the novitiate began at 8 in the morning of September 30th, the year of novitiate does not end at 8 o'clock in the morning of September 30th of the following year, but at midnight of the 30th. So that the profession cannot be made until October 1st has begun. And again, there are so many things here about the novitiate and the validity of orders that obviously CMRI does not even begin to look at. And if you, Mr. CMRI, wish to tell me that we're living in extraordinary times and these laws of the church are only guidelines, that they are not to be strictly followed and so on and so on and so on, then you're also going to have to give me a clear explanation of why, if it's not good enough for this any man, USA, nor his brother, nor his uncle, nor his in-laws, nor his outlaws, then how is it possible to be good for only CMRI members and maybe Archbishop Lefebvre members? And if you are going to tell me that Bishop Francis Shuckart could do these things, give approbation to his own community and the things I have already spoken about, then I repeat, logically speaking, any man from any place in the world, not only the USA, but yes, any man and his brother and his uncle and his in-laws and his outlaws, indeed, anyone and everyone can go up and start anything they want. That means that everyone who comes from Archbishop Took, all those Took bishops can found up religious order or congregation. One or two or three in every town of these so-called states they have their jurisdiction in. And it doesn't really matter what those superiors want to do. Everything goes as long as people will go along with you. I indeed agree with at least one statement that Father Francis Muir wrote in his letter of August 11th, 1984, in reply to the letter of Father Dennis Philemon and me of June 21st, but on this very last page 5, the last paragraph, Father Alfonso Mina writes, "Problems begin when we rely on self and take matters into our own hands." Indeed, that's exactly what Bishop Francis Shuckart has done, what others are doing, and all we have are problems. The only way to get rid of them is to live according to the teachings of the true Catholic Church. And some people then may believe what I was also told, that the Bishop of Boise, Idaho, Most Reverend Sylvester W. Trinan, in reading from the official Catholic Directory of the year 1980, we find the information that Bishop Sylvester W. Trinan was ordained June 11, 1946, and consecrated July 25, 1962. I point this out because this shows he was the Bishop of Boise and therefore under, and the Bishop over Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, when Francis Shuckart moved into there. And my search to find out what is it all about, what is right and what is wrong, who is right and who is wrong, I wrote a letter to Bishop Sylvester Trinan in September of 1984. And just a few days later, on September 12th, he replied to my letter. And at the bottom, he stated that he knew nothing about the Congregation of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe. And just this past October 5th, 1985, I phoned and spoke to Bishop Sylvester W. Trinan. And this is what was said as part of our conversation.
I was just wondering how you relive that, because with, if I was taking a vow to give obedience to Bishop Shuckart and his lawful successors, which none of it could be done anymore because he was not, he has no lawful successors, really.
So you are not bound by that vow?
And it was just really an illicit vow in a way?
No, you thought it was valid and everything, but and you didn't do anything wrong by doing that because you figured you were doing it right. But right now, that kind of a vow to him would cease because of what you just said. He was not authorized, and so your private vow, you would not be bound by that kind of thing to him.
That would be all three vows of poverty and chastity and obedience. None of them really are binding. One of the main things I asked is, at the bottom of your letter, you also answered I am not familiar with the Congregation of Mary Immaculate Queen of the Universe. If that is Shuckard's group, then it would be, excuse me, then it would not be recognized by Rome. Private vows made by members could easily be dispensed by the proper authority, but did you not know anything about the Congregation of Mary Immaculate Queen of the Universe? Or did Bishop Francis ever contact you as a lay brother before you started the community?
No, I don't think so. He started that community without any knowledge of mine, certainly without any permission. I think I heard about it. You know, I would visit up there in Curtin Lane once in a while, and I met brothers there, and I met sisters, but I never was acquainted with the constitution that they had or anything like that. He didn't seek any permission from me for that.
Did he ever talk to you in person that you remember?
At any time?
Yes. A seminar? But at that time, he did not request anything about starting a congregation, did he?
Oh, no. And then I tried to go to see him in Curtin Lane several times. And one time I got into the place where he was staying, but the lady there just said to me, well, he's not feeling well. He's in the back room here, but he's sick. Not receiving any visitors, and I told her that, well, I would just like to at least say hello, but I didn't get in there.
Did he ever write to you or in any way seek permission to move over to Coeur d'Alene, since he used to be in the Bellevue area over in Seattle? Did he ever ask to come to Idaho? Shakoin ever talk to you or seek any kind of permission?
I met him one time at the house in Curtin Lane. I went to visit, and I talked to him for some time, but he didn't ask for any permission at all of any kind.
Well, they also told me that they worked with the Father Leahy, you know, was kind of their spiritual director and so on. Did you know about that?
Well, at the very beginning when they came, and when they Bishop Francis was not way out, like he turned afterwards. At first, he just looked like he was a worker for the Blue Army. And the Blue Army was not condemned or anything. And it was only until after the Blue Army expelled him that Francis began to show what he was really all about. So it was a gradual thing. So I think at first, Father Leahy just kind of said, well, here's a Catholic man trying to spread devotion to our Blessed Mother. And so that was as far as that went. But then later on, when it became very evident that he was starting a religious order without permission, then the Blue Army expelled him and told him that he had no standing in the Blue Army anymore at all. And then gradually, month by month, year by year, he began to take these more outside the church positions.
And so from what Bishop Sylvester W. Tryon just told us, that Bishop Shuckard, as a lay brother, or as a bishop, has never seeked any type of permission from himself, Bishop Tryon, to found the religious congregation, and certainly Bishop Tryon never gave the least approbation of it, which means, of course, if it has any approbation, it all came from Shuckard himself. But Mr. CMRI, if you're still going to some way hold on to your beliefs that although any man and his brother and his uncle and his in-laws and his outlaws cannot do these things, some way CMRI's community can do it, And I need to have you refer to page 5 of the letter that Father Dennis Philomena Marie wrote on June 21st, 1984, where he speaks now of the subject of absolution of an accomplice in a sin of impurity. And I read, one of the most severe censures in the canon law of the Catholic Church is reserved for a priest who attempts to absolve an accomplice in his in his sin against the sixth commandment. This crime carries the penalty of excommunication, laetae sententiae, which is most expressly reserved to the Holy See. To incur this penalty, a priest must commit a sin of impurity with some other person and then attempt to hear the confession of that person. If such a crime occurs, the absolution is invalid and the minister incurs the excommunication, laetae sententiae. I have in my possession a statement sworn under oath from a young man who claims that he was seduced by Bishop Schuckardt, that he was used by Bishop Schuckardt for moral purposes, and that afterwards Bishop Schuckardt heard his confession. In my opinion and that of the priests and clerics that I consulted, Bishop Schuckardt clearly has incurred the penalty of this crime. I know from the statements of Bishop Schuckardt's current aides that some of these young men are currently involved in sins of impurity with him, and I also know for a fact that they are accustomed to confess to Bishop Schuckardt and not to any other priest. One of these young men told Father Mary Benedict that Bishop Schuckardt told him he may not discuss this matter in confession or in counseling with any other priest or superior. And obviously then those who are in the community know that Father Dennis Philomena Marie has very strongly claimed that Bishop Schuckardt is automatically excommunicated, reserved to the Holy See in a most special manner. And therefore, it becomes very obvious that with that excommunication, he certainly lost any jurisdiction. Of course, in my belief now, he never had it. But this becomes very serious if we look at matters correctly. For Father Dennis Philomena Marini's tapes that month also reviewed and brought to our memory that Bishop Schuckardt heard most all of the confessions from the time he was ordained, up at least until Reverend Father Clement Kubich came to the community, which we read in this bulletin with the coat of arms on it, that Father Clement returns to the community to stay in the Feast of St. Clement, 1972. And after that time, even we know that Bishop Schuckardt heard a number of confessions, especially who cannot logically assume that it's very probable he heard confessions of some of his accomplices in sin, maybe even the very short time after he was consecrated, or at least before the first vows were taken, which according to this same bulletin, it says in 1975, Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, first final vow ceremonies for the sisters at the City of Mary, August 22nd. And it's the next year, 1976, for the first final vows of Father Dennis Philomena Marie, Father Mary James, and Brother Michael Marie. So here we have from 1971 to 75, a number of confessions heard by this bishop, and now all we have to do is return to the radio program or the television program that was on public news in Spokane the spring of 1984, where it had the interview with these young men from the years 1970 to 1980 that were seduced by Bishop Francis in this sin of impurity. If you must by now see the logical conclusion. If Schuckardt absolved one of those men any time before anyone took religious vows, he was excommunicated, and obviously then he never did have any jurisdiction after that in which to receive anyone's religious profession. And furthermore, if he did this before Father Clement came, he certainly had no jurisdiction to be able to give to Father Clement or to anyone else. And furthermore, let me turn to the Busy Pastor's Guide a resume of canon law, moral and pastoral theology, together with the relevant decisions of the Roman Congregation, a translation by Reverend Oliver Dolphin of the 4th edition, 1923, and this as a Nihil Optate by William H. Agnew, S.J., and an imprimatur of George Cardinal Moon Deline, Chicago, April 3rd, 1924, by the Lakeside Press. And I turn then to page 38, question 122, and it reads, what penalty would be incurred by a priest authorized to hear confessions who would exceed the limit of his powers as to reserved cases? 1. If he presumed to absolve from an excommunication late sententiae, reserved in a most special manner or even a special manner to the sovereign pontiff, he would incur ipso facto an excommunication reserved simply to the sovereign pontiff. That's from Canon 2338, sub number 1. And number 2, if he absolved from cases reserved simply to the sovereign pontiff, or from cases which the bishop of the diocese has reserved to himself, he would incur ipso facto a suspension which would prevent him from hearing confessions. That's Canon 2366. If you're going to accept this teaching of the Church, which you must accept to remain a Catholic, then if Bishop Shuckart went to confession to Father Clement Kubich, and confessed this, and Father supposedly absolved him without having a necessary jurisdiction for this case resolved in the most special manner of the Holy See, then Father Clement himself becomes excommunicated, and Father Francis Meehan makes an open statement in his letter that he was the special confessor of Bishop Shuckart, and therefore he obviously falls under the same excommunication if Shuckart ever confessed this sin to him. And if Father Dennis Philomena Marie ever heard the bishop's confession, then he also falls under this excommunication automatically. And if Bishop Shuckart does not believe that such a thing is a sin, and he didn't even confess it, then he's excommunicated for being a heretic. So any way you look at it, as far as I can see it, he is excommunicated, has no jurisdiction that he can use, and therefore he cannot do anything that requires it. Therefore, there's never been even one religious profession of the Congregation of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe. And indeed, I think it's time to come out with everything and stop playing games and live our Catholic faith. And if you're going to invoke Epikai or something else to get around these truths of the Catholic faith, then Mr. CMRI, this is your crazy commentator, and I'm going to sing what I might think to be your theme song, which also would be the theme song of all these inner traditionalists, Lefebvre, Took bishops, and whoever else is involved in this crazy, crazy way of thinking. Because this tape has about run out of recording time on it, we'll play a little music now and pick up with this theme song of the traditionalist movement on the beginning of the next tape in this series.